Presented by the Esports Research Network and the Media Management and Transformation Center in Jönköping, Sweden.
Hello, I'm Brian. Welcome to the Esport Research Report. I'm from the Media Management and Transformation Center here in Jönköping in Sweden.
Hey everybody, I'm Steph Orm. I'm a professor at Emmanuel College in Boston in the United States. And today our guest with us is Julia Hiltscher. She's actually one of the founders of the Esports Yearbook. She's worked for ESL for a long time and has recently submitted her PhD thesis. So welcome, Julia.
Hey, thank you for having me. Thank you.
How long have you been at ESL? Is it 30 years?
Since 2003. That could amount to 18 years in July.
Okay, but we're not here to talk about ESL, even though I think you could talk about that a lot. So we're here to talk about your PhD thesis. So just to start it off, how do you define esports?
Oh, isn't that this thing with electronic games that you can play on your phone?
Forget about your PhD definition. What are esports to you?
Esports to me, that's forming a team with hopefully super great friends that are also skilled, and then grinding and trying to qualify, trying to compete, and then succeeding or failing, and yeah, learning so much through this human connection. Like you really get to know people when you have this goal in front of you that you are trying to achieve together. And you just learn so much about yourself and about your friends. And I think that's great.
I think we should change that question to what do esports mean to you and not what's your definition of it. That's actually really lovely.
Yeah, well, I feel like that's what most people do, right, is they talk about what it means to them. But you're the first person to really kind of talk about the social and cultural aspect of it, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, I can mostly just give you cultural and social perspectives because that's where I come from scientifically.
Sorry. I think that's great. I mean, same for me, right? I do a lot of cultural studies work, but I think that's actually a really nice segue into talking about your thesis project. So what was your project? Tell us a little bit about it.
I actually have it open right now, so I don't tell you that I don't drift too much. The title is actually at the moment Dota 2 and League of Legends, two of the world's most popular video games. Their cultural aspects, their genre, and its definition. That's a pretty long title. I just wanted to call my PhD MOBAs or something super catchy like Dota 2 and League of Legends, they're MOBAs, or yeah, something really short. But unfortunately, my professor, maybe he's right, you know how it works. He said, yes, you have to think of it this way. We are in this department and we are on the historic side, on the cultural side, and we are producing contents that we then want other people to inspire and give them more insights and stuff. So if you finally... you worked through your 20 working titles for your PhD, it's a good idea to try and find a title that people in other fields will understand. And so maybe it wasn't such a bad idea to see, okay, which games did I talk about in my thesis the most? And how can I explain my thesis to other disciplines, other fields, as short as possible, and this was the shortest we were able to come up with together. It is a joint production between me and my professor. We were throwing the titles at each other, and this is what we came up with. It's a bit boring, but
Hold on. Like, what is a MOBA? Just because you say you want it to be understood cross-disciplinary, but if I said to so many people I work with, hey, did you see that MOBA? They'd be going, what's wrong with you? What's a MOBA? What are you talking about? So what's a MOBA?
Thank you so much for asking this question, because that's basically the first question that I asked myself when I began my PhD, because my professor came to me and said, okay, now that you're on parental leave and you have been in ESL for such a long time, and my boys are such fanboys of you because you can get keys from League of Legends and you're like up there on the stage with the pros, so please don't just change diapers, write a PhD about esports. And I was like, oh, okay, that's possible, like during parental leave. And so I asked myself, what do I know most about? Like, where am I an expert? And because I really play tons of Dota and I have played tons of MOBAs, I asked myself, what is a MOBA? And is the acronym actually a good descriptive term, or is it a good acronym for this genre? So I kind of started off writing down what MOBAs are made of and looked at MOBAs from different perspectives and mostly from cultural perspectives. And I used a lot of theories also from the game studies field, because there was already so much being said about MOBAs and other esports titles.
Okay, so give us the version you give to a 55-year-old accountancy professor.
What I'm actually quite happy about is that there's a really great professor who isn't sorry, Professor Friermuth. So Professor Friermuth isn't so young anymore. He's not so young, he's not so old, and he is the one who said something really great, that the central audiovisual form of expression and narration of our digital culture today are video games, which is a pretty big sentence, I think, for everybody doing research in esports and in esports and gaming in general. Because now when you're talking to an octogenarian, you can go and say, when you were young, there were books and movies, but today we have video games, and video games are more, much, much more versatile and much more engaging than all the other media, because what I currently learned to say is pretty cool. Maybe you went to the cinema with your, grandchildren recently before Corona, and maybe you have watched Tenet or something cool. I mean, I know that my father-in-law still goes to the movies and he watches Tenet. So imagine you really like this movie, and tomorrow some of your cultural preferences, like the movie that you really like, music that you really like, whatever, you can put into this movie, and then you can see the movie again, and something that you really like to read or listen to is going to be part of this movie suddenly, like just in a couple of days. And this is something that movies usually cannot do, and is something that many video games don't do, but MOBAs do that every day, and MOBAs have tons of updates every day. They are not passive like a movie, like I just explained. They are almost like living creatures, like, and like they're magnetic, because people go in forums and say, oh, I only wished this and this creature would look like a creature from Game of Thrones or from Perdido Street Station, from just like some of the cultural stuff that I really love. And then a developer goes like, yeah, I will take this because so many people say that. I like that too. And if I put that into the game, it's such a no-brainer because people are going to love it because it's something that they have influenced is going to be part of the game. And this process has become so fast, like within just a few days nowadays, content is drawn into games like League of Legends, Dota, but also Fortnite, also now Rocket League. And then if you, from a scientific perspective, go like, these are two or three games that I know where cultural references pop up very quickly within a couple of days or a couple of weeks. And then when you make a list of these games, and then on the other side, you make a list of the most popular streams or games on Twitch, you're going to recognize that there's a connection, that actually the more popular the game is, the more cultural references are in the game and vice versa. And that's what I found just from starting off closely looking at the cultural references in these MOBAs. And I was shocked myself at how many categories of cultural reference there actually are in Dota 2 and League of Legends, because if you would just have a casual conversation about this, like over a glass of wine and you couldn't cheat and Google it, you wouldn't be able to tell me how many different kinds of cultural sources, I'm repeating myself, there are. And I think you would be astonished. Or could you tell me just a few that you can think of? Like
this is your PhD. You say you'd be surprised how you couldn't tell us. You kind of, the accountancy professor is now going, I've lost track. So MOBAs are multi-online battle arenas where teams of 5 versus 5 play each other. And you have spent how many years on this PhD now? 5 years?
Yeah, I kind of started with the research in 2013 because I already had this interest. I had these thoughts in my head that didn't go away. And then in 2014, I started the actual research. Yeah.
You've been buried in this for 6 years. So you've actually lost track of what the question, what's a MOBA? And you're just going, Shakespeare is in, because I've read some of it. And I was just, what did I read? I read a lot of it, actually, very quickly, but I did read it. And I was going, what, Shakespeare? What? Blade Runner? I was going, Julia, have you sent me the right thing? Because there was these kind of elements of that it really surprised me. I thought I had the wrong document open.
Okay, I was so scared right now because it sounded like you produced this great pile of stuff in only 6 years.
No, it was great. to actually have me so going, oh wow, yeah. That's really good. I mean, there was Japanese samurais, and I read so much stuff I kind of lose track. But Julia, tell us some of the the different cultural sources that you identified.
Yeah. I identified a couple of sources. I also just spoiled a couple because, of course, there's tons of literature in Dota and League. Also, I want to apologize to all the great developers who are making these kind of games, because I know there's more so-called MOBAs, not only Dota and LoL. There's so many more. But the PhD is already almost at 400 pages, and I just wasn't able to look into all of the games, but I compared the two main games to the others. Yeah, to get back to the cultural references, I have theater, movies and television, dance. You have to listen carefully, and then later you can give me your favorite category, and then we will have a look at the category and see what's in there. So dance, music and sound, celebrities, other video games, card and tabletop games, literature, mythology, I have, that's basically the end first of the overarching categories, and afterwards I'm having a look at esports as a cultural phenomenon in itself.
Okay, well, so, let Steph pick. Steph, you pick a category there. I feel like we're playing a quiz game now. Steph, yeah, you choose the category here.
I know. I was trying to think. I was like trying to imagine examples for each of them as I went. Let's talk about celebrity. What's an example?
That's the one I don't want to talk about.
But no, I'm curious because I know for like Fortnite and stuff, but like I play a lot of League of Legends, and to me, I couldn't think of an example for that one. So
you're setting a challenge. I like it.
Well, I want to test my understanding.
This is one of the smallest categories, actually, but it's also a good one.
I think she's gonna fail. She's not pulling off top of her head. That's an instant fail. I remember my PhD. No, I don't know.
I'm trying at all.
Something about smartphone motivation.
So this one is so the Red Baron Corki obviously could be a reference to the Red Baron. So kind of, Wikipedia says that's a celebrity. So
like historically. Okay. Yeah.
That's historically.
That's the German fighter pilot that gave trouble to all the RAF, the famous, or is that Captain America's enemy? Who's the Red Baron? That's Red Skull. Who's the Red Baron? Is that the famous German fighter pilot?
I think so. I just know the Snoopy, like from the Peanuts cartoons. You know what I'm talking about?
So you're talking about a cultural reference in a cultural reference.
It is, yeah. Yeah, okay. It's like cultural reference Inception or something. But I don't know who the original Red Baron is. No, some kind of pilot.
So the real name of Red Baron is Manfred Albrecht Freiherr von Richthofen. He lived 1892 to 1918. And he shot down 80 planes in World War I and was killed by a gunshot fired from the ground.
I win.
Dum, dum, dum. I didn't dare to look into, like, because for me, it's not cool to be a celebrity because you have killed 80 people, but I stopped there. Like, I didn't,
Okay, I've got one. I want the mythology. Yeah. I want to know which gods or Greek mythology.
That one felt so obvious to me, Brian.
Yeah, but what were the obvious ones? I don't play League of Legends. They all seem like Greek gods to me when I'm looking at it.
In League of Legends, there's also Lee Sin, who's a reference to Bruce Lee and has lots of sayings from Bruce Lee movies.
Oh, that's cool, actually. Still not going to learn about League of Legends. I don't have the time. I don't want to be crap at something for 400 hours. It's bad enough being bad after 1,000 hours of CSGO. I'm not repeating this.
So let's have a look at Abaddon from Dota 2. In Dota 2, Abaddon's lore says that he is a newborn of the cavernous house Avernus, who was bathed in the black mist. All of the baptized children grow up believing themselves fierce protectors of their lineal traditions, the customs of the realm, but what they are really protecting is the font itself. The font, the magical font. Abaddon is an undead warrior on an probably undead horse. Visually, he reminds players of ring wraiths. Correct me if I'm wrong. Oh. They are also called Nazgul from J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. He does not look like a biblical devil with horns and wings. However, his abilities could define him as an angel of death. He can release a coil of deathly mist. Abaddon releases a coil of deathly mist that can damage an enemy unit or heal a friendly unit at the cost of some of Abaddon's health. He can summon dark energies. Summons dark energies around an ally unit, creating a shield that absorbs a set of amount of damage before expiring, and silence and slow his enemies with a chilling curse. I'm quoting the Dota 2 wiki. Abaddon strikes an enemy, slowing the target's movement speed.
You have to read
it four times. Yeah.
You read stories to your kids at night, I can tell that. But when you described him, I was thinking Marvel's Inhumans with the mists. So it just shows how interlinked all these things are. I mean, we look at Harry Potter. I use Harry Potter as an example teaching marketing about creativity because, you know, this comes up so much, but J.K. Rowling just took a bunch of stuff and put it together and produced something fantastic. And I think obviously what we're seeing from what Julius PhD has happened is that I think it's the same thing for Dota 2 and League of Legends, except Harry Potter stopped. Mm-hmm. And I think what you're saying is that Dota and League of Legends are almost live in that they're constantly updating, which is one of the innovations of these games. Is that where I'm...
Yeah. And for example, from the earlier days of the games is, for example, the character Puck appearing in Dota, and he is Puck from Shakespeare's Midsummer Night's Dream. Hmm. But as the games grow older, there's also characters... for example, Zillion resembles Marvel's movie Doctor Strange, and that's a movie from 2016. Or what I found really, really, really interesting as a Game of Thrones fan was when fans cried out that they wanted to have Game of Thrones dragons in Fortnite instead of the what are they called? Like glides or whatever,
and,
hang gliders, and then you could suddenly you could buy a dragon hang glider, and there you go. What could be more of a marketing driver, a product that sells like hot bread, warm bread, and we say in Germany.
Hotcakes. Sells like hotcakes in English.
It sells like hotcakes. Because it's the young audience going like, I want this cultural reference because it means everything to me. It's like when you're 12, 13, and you realize for the first time, there's these bands and other people buy their shirts. Maybe I should do that too, because everybody, and then you're like, and you listen to the songs and you're like, oh, that's so cute. I think I'm going to get a Backstreet Boys tattoo I'm not 13 or I.
Hold on, wait. So you're saying that people should grow out of buying all the crap,
Brian's self-conscious about his Backstreet Boys tattoo is what this is about.
I did it my way.
But no, I was thinking the t-shirt example is really cool because I think of that a lot about like skins, right? Like, you know, customizable things about your characters or items that you can get that are inspired off of pop culture references. And like, you see them, and if you're a big fan of that franchise, you're like, that's so cool. Like, I want that because other people in the game see it. It's kind of like wearing a t-shirt of something I'm a big fan of in real life, but also like equipping that skin and playing in the game with that, like, is a way of sharing that fandom you have with other players, which I think is kind of cool. Yeah.
And ultimately what you're saying is that people buy these things because they have this intrinsic urge to connect with other people. And then when you look at what happened during Corona, when people were more locked in, they would spend more money on skins, on everything that they can, with things with which you can show what you like, who you are, and these help you to connect with other humans. And that's something that we really crave right now, as immediate connection with other people. And MOBAs, they give you a connection with other people, more like in more ways and therefore more intensively than other games, because you are in a team play situation, but there's also lore, background story, all the pop culture. And then in the end of the day, there's nobody in CSGO who says, this character is based on the Red Baron, and suddenly a dragon flies in and suddenly your favorite song plays or stuff like that. That's not happening in CSGO. While MOBAs are very extreme, that's why I'm also not calling them MOBAs, I'm calling them lane pushing games, but we can discuss that next time. But MOBAs are so interesting. I call them cultural carriers, because no matter how many cultural references you're going to add, the ludic elements are never going to be ruined. Like, the rules will be the same, the playground will be the same, and the match length will be about the same. Everything that you need to play is going to be the same, so you don't have to worry that there's suddenly a worse team play experience because of the lore. But you can still add massive amounts of lore, basically as much as you like. And that's hard to take away as a... Because if I was a marketer, if I was...
You are a marketer.
I don't know. If I was seeing this from a business perspective, then I would immediately say every game should be on every game you should be able to add endless amounts of references, because this way you can make your fans happy, and these references, they can never interfere with gameplay. That's my key takeaways. And then if you just take these two punchlines that I just gave you and go to every single game that you know and say, yeah, will the gameplay be disturbed here by background story, by lore, by too much colorful shit you add in there? Or won't it? Like, can I add as much stuff as I want, or can't I? Then we are again at this. What's popular on Twitch, and. Some games who are ideal cultural carriers have it easier. That doesn't mean that Counter-Strike is not successful, but doesn't also mean that people are not using the same mechanics on marketing this game, because you actually have lots of stuff in CSGO that people can help to develop and can have an influence on, and this way indirectly sell themselves what they want. That's also a mechanic that you have there in CSGO. It's not if you don't actually play, but Brian is playing CSGO, he will know that there's also...
We all know.
It's my life. I can't go out.
I'm are you aware, for example, that in Dota 2 you can even add entire dresses for the characters if you want to? You can like go to the Steam Workshop and upload something that you would like to suggest, and then it's an automated process. So if enough people like what you have made, then it's going to end up in the store and you will get a percentage.
Our next guest is in here behind you. I mean, that's actually really cool. I would, if I was playing Dota, I would totally be doing that. It's like those Lego sets that people vote for, like Ghostbusters. It sounds fantastic. I mean, I have one last question just on this topic. And, you know, okay, look, CSGO is my biggest reference point because it's what I'm doing when I'm not working. And it's technically what I'm doing when I'm working too. But I've come across a lot of toxicity in there, you know, and I was wondering, like, listening to you now, that you don't hear as much about toxicity in games like Dota 2 or League of Legends. And I was wondering if it's this shared cultural, okay, maybe I'm naive, but CSGO seems like little 15-year-old boys going nuts sometimes. And, like, do you think that the shared culture and cultural artifacts within the game maybe negate some of the potential toxicity in these lane-pushing games?
That's a great research topic. I'm not an expert on this. I would just assume that toxicity is almost about the same in CSGO as it is in the other in lane pushing games, but it's also governed differently. Definitely what I know. Riot have some great measures to promote good friendly behavior, for example, and I also think that's the way to go. I wouldn't put out a game and not govern socially what people are doing. I think developers have a social responsibility there, and I think just my general thoughts, because I have in my life, in my esports life, I have learned a lot about toxicity, and I think that it ruins a game for people, because if there's 100 good guys and some just one person who's always toxic, then the experience will be ruined for 100 people or even more. So it's also, there's a economic motivation always to limit that somehow. And
but of course, as you know, you actually said that people learn social skills and working with others through MOBA. So just to end on a positive, Mark, tell us how MOBAs and League of Legends can engender these social skills training for particularly younger people or even older people.
What I really like to say when you are asking this question is always really important for me to say that often some people think it's very likely to, because people have actually in the press heard about that there's this great team building and opportunities, for example, through World of Warcraft, that people who are nowadays playing a lot World of Warcraft or lane pushing games, they will be such great team managers, team players in companies in the future, which is also true. And there's scientific proof that it's the case. And I would like to point out that the same has been found for FPS, because there's often this, that's not knowledge or that's not fact, but there's often this assumption going around that first-person shooters are not great team-building tools in the same way that like some arena games are. And I think it's quite the opposite. I think it has just something to do with how clear the goal is. In Counter-Strike, it is so nice that you know exactly, if you fail in this round, you will know exactly why. You will know that was my fault and I have to improve on this and this and this. And that's important. This is how you can grow, that you can acknowledge your weaknesses and grow on your weaknesses. And that's something that will happen in CSGO in the same way it will happen in Dota. And I would even dare to say something, sometimes not even so easy to tell if you have made a wrong move in Dota. Whilst in CSGO, it's usually super clear if this was my mistake or not. Because if I try to defuse the bomb when someone is standing right behind me and I know he is, then it's just a bad move. And then people, my teammates are dead and they will scream like, what are you doing? And you're it's a totally messed up shit. And you will know you did the wrong thing. They will know you did the wrong thing. And you have to learn then, or you have to look for a new team. And just kidding. Depends on how much patience your friends have with you. And I from experience when it was from so many Dota and League of Legends matches, I know that it's sometimes clear what you did wrong there, but also, sometimes it isn't. I think in Unreal Tournament and in Quake and in CS, it's clearer. And when you play those games, you will also very often play them by yourself just for aim training or something. Like you will probably very often play some Quake one-on-one to improve your aim. And especially then, if you lose, it's your own responsibility. And I think that's so important when we talk about training and ask ourselves I want to go pro. What do I do? Yeah, you have to make mistakes and try to remember your mistakes and then try to find maybe resources on the internet. And try to learn how you can figure that out. But also training is another story. What was the question, Brian?
Oh, Steph's going to hit you up with the last question now.
I think you've sufficiently answered Brian's question though. There's, you know, it's interesting. So in terms of what are things you would like to see other esports researchers look into? What are topics that you think researchers should be covering?
There's one thing that I'm asking myself recently, and I'm working on this a little bit. I try to draw this holistic map, or I don't even know if holistic is the best word because I'm not American and I'm just German and speak German and think in German. And but I try to make this map of the esports ecosystem, because I think it would be so helpful to draw. So I want like the super super difficult high detailed mind map where you can see this is the whole esports ecosystem. This is where you can go from zero to hero. This is like the lower level, mid level, the pro level. These are the league organizers. These are the streamers. These are the influencers. Then how far would the Olympics be? Would it even be in the map? And the government bodies, all the associations that are there, the Esports Research Network, Women in Games Association, just literally everyone, categorize them and go down in detail as much as you can. And because I think it has not been done before. And,
Tobias, there'll be a lot of people might say, oh, we've got a version of this. But you're right. It's definitely. I agree that it's the most challenging thing people do. And I've tried to do models within papers, and I've just gone, oh my god, this has been 3 days, and I'm still got like this diagram, and it's wrong. So I think that is a great topic for anyone to pursue. Anyway, Julie, we're out of time right now. Thank you very much for being here. If she's upset, but you know, she has to go have her dinner and go visit her horse, who's called Emma, which we found out. If you want to know more about Julia, there will be information and links to some of the stuff she does below this video or podcast once I eventually get the audio podcast going online, which if you're listening to this on audio, I have managed. Okay, thank you very much, Julia.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Steph and Brian. Take care.
Bye.
Fuck COVID. Bye-bye.
I think we'll leave that in.
Thank you.